Okay, thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is March 12th, 2020, and I welcome you to the March Town Council meeting. We will start with the invocation and Pledge of Allegiance, and Gail Tabor is going to lead us in that, please. Thank you, Gail.
Pray with me, y'all. Holy One, as we gather here to do the business of governance, we pause to offer our thanks. First, for the joy of living in the place we are blessed to call home, for the beauty of your creation, and our eyes to see it, and our ears to hear it, and our minds to understand. We offer our honor and our praise. We are ever thankful for life itself and for a measure of health. Guide us as we face times of concern and fear, that our choices and our vision will be ever toward all and especially toward those who are most vulnerable. Thank you for the ability to be involved in useful work and for the honor of bearing appropriate responsibilities. Though at times it may feel heavy, grant us the ability to move ever forward. Tonight, in our ever-changing world, we pray for our mayor and for the members of this council and for the various levels of town officials who serve. Grant them wisdom as they govern, a keen sense of welfare and the need of the people, a thirst for justice and righteousness, and the confidence to do what is good and fitting, the ability to work together in harmony. And God, we ask for personal peace. Bless the work that is done here tonight, that it would benefit all who live, play, and work around our beloved town of Curry Beach. In the name of the one we call holy, amen.
Amen.
If you would rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Gail. Okay, gentlemen, we have quite a few items on the consent agenda. If you would take a moment to read through that and let me know if you believe there are any changes necessary.
Item 3-4, that date has moved for us from April 19th to 21st to June.
Okay, so
June 2nd and 3rd.
So we are still approving the expenses, but the date has changed.
Correct.
Anything else here? The approval of the pedestrian committee, budget amendment, the resolution 02.
Yes, yeah, so the only other is 3.7.
3.7.
That one's closing Atlantic Avenue for the annual street festival. We probably should move that to new business to discuss that when we talk about the coronavirus, which I'll be adding when we do the agenda.
Okay, so you want to move 3.7
out?
You were going to take 3.7 out, and then under commissioner items, or when you do coronavirus, you're going to talk about it.
Maybe I read it wrong. Sorry about
3.7.
That.
3.7.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the right one.
We're definitely not taking out 3.6.
At least on my copy, it's 3.7.
Okay.
It is.
Okay. There's the approval of Little Pink Houses and the approval of the of invoices. So, elimination of 3.7, changing the date on 3.4. May I have a motion, please?
Make a motion to adjust the consent agenda as directed.
Second.
Adjusting the date.
Okay, we have a motion. Second, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you, John. By the way, I should say that Commissioner John Ellen is out of town. He's on the phone. He's not speaking from above. He's just... He's speaking from Virginia, I believe. Okay. Now the adoption of the agenda.
So I'd like to add under new business, it would be 9.2, update on the coronavirus for emergency management. And then 9.3 would be the street festival that we just took off the consent agenda.
And also, while we're talking about new business, we can remove 9.1 because there's no need to reschedule that meeting.
Okay. 9.1 is gone. So 9.1 will be update on the coronavirus. And 9.2, what was the other one?
Closing the road for the street festival.
Closing road. Okay. Any other recommendations to the agenda?
Make a motion we pass as amended.
Second.
All right.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Do we have anyone who has signed up to speak? Okay. All right, then. We will move into the presentations, which would be Mr. Jonathan Hinkle from LDSI Stormwater Project Update. Yes,
how are you doing, John?
That's right. We having a problem?
Flash drive. Flash is just a name. Do you have your computer? You could plug in your computer there. If they can't get it to work.
Yeah, we could probably do a mirror.
Use one of our iPads if you want to. Share the screen.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to do it. Him and Amanda can figure it out. If they can't get it to work. I've plugged mine in before, so I know they can do it.
That's a massive laptop.
John, can you mute since there's people coughing around you?
Okay.
Thanks, sir.
Stay safe. Do they make you pull that laptop out in airports?
They do. That's massive. And it is not light.
It's got its own roller.
I've been called DJ with this laptop all great today.
See, we know technology.
Mm-hmm.
We can do anything.
I don't know, John. Does that happen to be Tuscan?
Yeah. Good background.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, that background's just for you.
Just what I was going to pull for him tonight.
Yeah, for the crowd that don't, recognize the background, that's outside of the NC State football stadium. That's the Wolves, and our public works director is a Carolina fan, so that's why I'm picking on.
Okay. So you can see it there.
All right, John D'Amico, I'm an engineer with LGSI. We were hired by the town to conduct a stormwater investigation. From K Avenue to Slough Point. That was what we defined as Area B. It includes H&H analysis, hydraulics and hydrology, as well as updating the existing GIS infrastructure and stormwater database. Area A goes to the town limits, and that at this point in time just includes the GIS inventory and existing database. So some of the assumptions we use in our models and our analysis is the town sits on the barrier islands, as y'all know, very high infiltration rates, deep sands, so the storm water can get into the ground when it is on a pervious surface. The analysis also conducted, we assume that as we modeled it, what we observed was existing conditions. So some of these pipes over the course of October when we started to present day, when we surveyed it, there was some detrital matter, some sediment accumulation, etc. We come back and some of that was moved in or through public works maintenance, it was removed. But we had to assume that it was a steady state and the way we surveyed it was the way we modeled it. Around town hall here, you have pervious pavement. We assumed that it was unclogged and able to infiltrate as designed. So for our survey efforts, we have provided GIS data as well as a sealed map. And there is a link that we have sent Public Works that shows it is a user interface so that you can click in, look at the outfall that we picked up, as well as it provides the catchment data or inlet data for each structure.
And right now that's hosted on your site, but we're going to move that to ours, correct, Jimmy?
Yeah, that's correct.
So all that data does come with this to the town?
Yes, sir. Here's another photo of the structures as well as some watershed delineations that we did. So for the H&H analysis, as I said, I met with Commissioner Hagler and Mr. Jimmy back in January, and we discussed some sensitivity analysis. So we do these engineering models as well as the mayor. And we do these models, and you know, there's a book answer, and then there's professional judgment, and then there's living here, working here, and knowing what happens within our storm infrastructure. So we went back and we looked at the infiltration rates and tried to mimic what would be quote unquote local conditions or observed conditions, and try to massage, as I like to call it, the model in order to accurately predict what is going on. And this is just some of the spreadsheet models here. One reason we've got this slide in here, this is a hydraulic grade line profile a couple of the ponds and a couple of the pipes within the network. And if you notice, you've got a couple pipes with what would be reverse grade. That was a common occurrence. I think we know that. It's within our coastal communities, the places that were first settled, as well as you got low head, so meaning there's not a lot of fall between upstream and downstream. You put in a pipe, you try to put it in as best possible, but every once in a while there is some reverse grade on them. So here, we use a model called Silver Storm. It uses a dynamic kinematic wave equation to solve, meaning that it is a non-steady state. So it's not a single snapshot in time, and it looks at precipitation over a six-hour period and simulates rainfall over that six-hour period. It accumulates within the catchment, and then it tries to move the water downstream. Here's our what we call IDF curves, intensity, duration, frequency curves. All it is showing is just the amount of rainfall, inches per hour, over the course of time. Part of this whole analysis, we were working with Ms. Nancy on a stormwater infiltration study, feasibility study, and we were wondering, NOAA takes a significant amount of time to update their rainfall analysis. And so we met with the State Climate Office, got some data from them, and we tried to do, the analysis on whether the NOAA data was correct or whether it needed to be updated for our model. And what you see is there's an increase in your higher duration, low recurrence interval. So what that means is we are seeing more rain, more precipitation at our storm events that are happening more frequently, and they are becoming longer. I think most of us that have lived in Eastern North Carolina kind of have seen that.
How bad was that influenced by just Florence? Do you know?
It actually was not influenced by Florence at all, because the data cut off in 2017. They won't release the 2018.
Okay. Then it'll get even worse. Okay.
Unfortunately.
Just truth.
Okay, what's the summary of our finding, getting into what we found? There's a lot of choke points throughout the town and throughout Area B watershed. You got a 48 and an 8 going into a 30, 18 going into a 30. Typically, what you see is an increase in hydraulic capacity as you move downstream. When you have a 48 that goes into a 30, as well as a 30 plus an 18 going into the 30, that's what we call choke points and or throttling. So you're trying to shove a lot of water into a smaller diameter pipe. What that causes, hydraulic grade line to jump up in these manholes and typically where you see surface ponding. Here's another example on Fifth Avenue. You got an 18 and a 15 going into a 12. So another choke point. 12's in between a 15 and 18. This is right outside here. You got a 24, dual 24s coming into a 30. 15, 12, 15 into an 18. Again, just additional choke points. Also notice multiple obstructions on the inlets. Vegetation, we've noticed sediment, we've noticed yard furniture, we've noticed quilts, several things that can obstruct an inlet and prevent the storm from getting into the sewer or storm sewer system. So you also have some things that, from an engineering standpoint, I kind of can understand. I don't know that I would have designed them that way, but it is what it is, and we analyze them. So same thing that can happen on your inlets here with vegetation on a pipe. When you start having sediment that is blocking the pipe, and let's say this is a 12-inch pipe, and you're reducing it to a 3-inch capacity, you can have significant capacity reductions, and you get surface ponding just because you've got some blockage. These are interesting. I will say this. I don't know what to call these. They're non-DOT, you can't go buy those type of grates. Very interesting to model. I would say they've been here for a long time. And also, if I'm not mistaken, these are just some small grates beside some residents. I think this one's right down the road here, that you can see the roof drain coming in is starting to get clogged as well. So from a big picture scale, now that we've discussed some of the small microscopic type drainage issues, from a holistic approach, we noticed that there's some non-town owned SEMs or BMPs. That's a stormwater control measure or a best management plan, practice from a stormwater perspective. And we noticed that some of those that are not owned by the town are offering some decreased capacity, but we are going to get with the homeowners association to discuss that, as well as some members of the council, and try to work through that and get some more detailed analysis in that area. Additionally, this is we noticed this quite a bit throughout the watershed. You'll have an inlet, and then you'll have a 12 inch service line that's coming in from a small catch basin and or a small yard inlet, etc. And based on our modeling, we're showing that the hydraulic capacity of those lines, not sure if they're town owned or not, they're outside of the easement and the right of way, but they appear to be undersized, and most of the time they're PVC. So the next steps, we have already provided the council an alternative analysis phase. Our recommendation is, we see this with a lot of coastal towns, and the need to utilize what you've got. You have a very precious resource. This sand and the high infiltration rate needs to be capitalized on. There's quite a few residents that I could throw a baseball at or hit a golf ball to that have storm gutters that go right to the concrete. That concrete comes down or runs down that driveway, or water runs down the driveway, gets into the gutter, and then goes into the storm system. That's a demand on the sewer or storm sewer system that doesn't need to be there. If you turn that gutter and have an extension and get it onto the grass, onto the lawn, it'll infiltrate, and then that prevents the demand on the storm sewer system. One of your neighbors, this is Pine Knoll Shores ordinance that they just put in not too long ago, has actually put that in their ordinance. I highly recommend looking into that. I commend the town on their annual maintenance, doing a good job. We actually saw improvements while we were doing the project. And there's another project, the Matsu project, that I would recommend. Offering a bleed off. When you get a structure, and we noticed a couple of them, that the sediment was coming in and getting to the point that it was very near the top of the grate, that causes a backwater effect or a tailwater effect. And I think that sediment is moving through the system at variable rates, and it just depends on the amount of rainfall that we get. So if there is an opportunity, and further analysis needs to be done, but if there's bleed-off opportunities where it could not short-circuit but have a secondary route to get through, I would highly recommend whether it's us or another engineering firm, analyze that. That's, I appreciate the time and thank y'all. Any questions?
So each of those pinch points you have identified through, and we have those, and I guess we'll have to take a look at the pinch points and see what we're doing. But the recommendation you made that essentially says put the water in the yard. Wouldn't that cause flooding in the yard? Are you saying that? I mean, some of these people here would say that would flood my yard, I think.
Well, the amount of roof area that you have most of the time, and I'm not going to say always do that, mm-hmm. but most of the time, the yards that I've seen in this study are large enough, you've got deep enough sand, that your infiltration rate, based on what we did on our previous analysis and working with some other engineering firms, you're in the 20 inches per hour rate. I've lived in Eastern North Carolina all my life except for the time that I was at NC State. I've not seen too many 20 inches per hour storm events. They might have happened, but I don't remember very many of them over my 35 years of being on this earth. So if you turn that nozzle, that storm gutter into the yard, then I think with spread and or your deep sands, you'll be A-okay.
Okay, so then I think I understand what you told me. If we spread the water into the yard, it prevents it from going into the systems that have the pinch points and back up the water into the ponding that is causing the flooding.
That is correct.
Interesting.
John, when are you expected to contact the HOAs to discuss your findings?
In the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Yeah, we got to talk about when to make sure we let you guys know.
I'm sorry for the previous meeting, but I noticed the biggest pond along Settlers was not included in A section. Has that already been discussed, or is that for later?
It's a later study. We weren't authorized to study that. Just
yeah, we started out, we basically used our budget from this year on the areas that were identified as the worst from Florence and Dorian. Okay. And so we focused on the areas that had the biggest problems in Florence and Dorian.
The only reason I ask is because we do have, most of our drains do have the white indicators that they had done surveys all the way around the pond except for two or three. That's why I didn't know why did they survey it and just decided they didn't have enough money to include it in it. It was surveyed. That's what I wanted to know.
So what we did on that, how we broke into what to survey and what not to survey, because a whole house analyzed everything would have cost a lot more.
Right.
So we had the data that Commissioner Hagler is referring to, and we applied an offset to that, and we looked at what comes in upstream and has a significant watershed that could be affecting those parcels. So we, in the proposal stage, we kind of reduced the total amount of storm infrastructure that the town has down to what was key based on the Dorian and Florence, for lack of a better term, complaints or reported ponding.
Well, and we did not have any major problems.
Exactly.
As the other did, but I just want to make sure because we're going to get questions on why.
Yeah.
So
we chose by where the problem areas of the town were. That's what we did. Yep.
You.
Yes, sir. It's a good question.
You really have me thinking about that now. What did you say our rate was? 20?
20 inches.
20 inches per hour is pretty conservative. Out there on the dune, you're getting a lot better, but mm-hmm. we did have some that were in the 240 per hour. 240 wow. inches an hour is a lot of capacity.
Wow.
I think that there's two issues with that. One, in the part of town, which is the worst part right now, that was actually, I wouldn't say it was wetlands, but it's definitely got hard pan, so it's not pure sand. So there's that one issue. The second issue is he's exactly right. The properties that had problem, if you look at them in relation to the road, they're below road level. So what happens is when the road fills, it goes and backfills their properties. All that water wasn't just the property owner's issue. If you raise the the light, you could block it. Like if you look at my house, if you drive by there, there's a big berm in front of my house because of Fran. I almost got water in my downstairs, so I built a berm and put sandbags there if it's going to be too bad to block the water from the road because I'm below the road level. Because my house was built before we paved E Avenue, down, at least E Avenue and 5th and E. And so when they paved it, it got raised up and I couldn't raise my house because it's on a slab. Yeah. So I had to fix something, right? So I made a barrier, basically.
But it is interesting. You did mention hard pan. We probably do need to understand where the hard pan is.
Correct.
But I do like the thought that says if you disperse the water instead of funneling it all into your drainage system, essentially,
right,
you wouldn't have such a big problem with your drainage system.
Right.
And that sounds like an easy thing to at least test.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Well, I don't know how easy to test. I think there's going to be a lot of pushback from all of the homeowners that have basically their roof drains under their ground and coming through the asphalt on the Settlers Lane, among other places, mm-hmm. where we paved around their outfalls. They're into the curb, basically. A lot of them are.
Yes, sir.
And I don't know if that's actually, it's obviously not in our ordinance right now that it's not allowed, but I'm not sure what the state of North Carolina will say about it as we continue to deal with them on our stormwater system stuff. I say it's not a best practice, but I don't know if they say it's not allowed or not.
I don't know that you're going to find that anywhere in the any drainage law or any pollution prevention law or any Clean Water Act law. That I think you're probably not going to find a lawsuit there. But whether it is a lawsuit or litigious or the smart thing to do and being a steward of the deep sand and being a steward and working with your neighbor and realizing that if I can reduce the amount of volume that I'm sending downstream and that's going to reduce the demand on my drainage network and reduce the ponding that is experienced, is that the correct and the stewardship thing for me to do?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, any other questions, commissioners?
So the next step from Public Works is for Jimmy and our stormwater team. Right now it's just an internal team, but we're going to talk about that when I talk about stormwater, to evaluate the information and turn that into potential projects for council to then build into the budget process. Because if you remember when we approved this, the plan was to give this information in enough time so that Jimmy could incorporate it for the upcoming budget process for stormwater projects in the second half of the year. So that's where we are. So we're still on track with that.
Okay. Can you send us that PowerPoint?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
One other question, right? Is the Dunes Pond included in that on Sloop?
The Dunes Pond on Sloop. I'd have to look at his map for
anchor,
sure.
Actually, it's called Anchor.
I'll go back and check for you.
All right, if you can let me know later. All right, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
All right, so. Good. One area is kind of complete. Now we need to figure out what we're going to do with the data. Okay.
Yeah, it'll show up in the budget process.
Yeah. So thank you.
Public Works will be bringing potential projects to the council to put in the budget.
Sounds good. Thank y'all.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jonathan. John, did you have any questions?
No.
Okay.
That was good.
Okay, committee business. Community Center Committee. No representations. They are going to have coffee with the mayor, I guess, on the 28th of this month. And they usually make some really good muffins. So if you would like to go to Coffee with the Mayor and have great muffins, it is going to be from 9 to 11 on the 28th. In the community center. So the guys who usually come and just spend it looking at me, this will be a better event. Marketing committee.
Mayor?
Yes, sir.
The next marketing committee meeting is 11:30 on the 31st there in Town Hall.
Okay. And one of the things on my mind, John, is with COVID-19, I'd be curious to know, and I will ask TDA what their evaluation is relative to, will people want to come here and be out in the open air and use the beaches, or will they in fact say we're all staying home, in which case we would have some significant economic impact into the ROT funds. So there's a couple questions that we need to explore, I guess, as we move forward here. But there's a potential for quite a loss of money that we normally carry through our budget.
And I guess it's possible that another 2 weeks that the committee leadership on downtown Wilmington may not even want to hold the meeting, depending on how bad this gets.
Yeah, I guess whatever the money available, we will need to, spend it unless we get a reprieve from the legislature, the state legislature. So the question would be is how do you utilize that money in an environment where people may not be excited to come to continue to generate the ROT, which pays for an awful lot of the tourist activities. Of course, if that looks like we have a problem, I am sure that we will talk as council about what are activities that should be canceled and eliminate some of the expense. But in any case, we're not there yet. Shoreline access and beach protection. Dennis, anything?
Yes. Just an amendment. So the Shoreline Access and Beach Protection Committee revised our brochure that we have on safety regulations and town ordinances and about 2 years ago. And in that process, we took the ordinances and regulations that were published in the town webpage from several years ago. And then it came after we finished that and built our new signs and made a few things. Nancy brought to my attention that, in fact, those weren't really correct. So the old published ordinances or summary of ordinances on the web page was incorrect. Didn't really know where it came. The only two major things that we identified that needed to be changed had to do with the surfing regulation and swimming regulations near the pier. So as you know, we have no surfing near the pier.
Right.
The old regulation indicated that it was no surfing within two jetties north and south. Those jetties are gone.
Yes.
They're buried. Washed away.
Mm-hmm. They're buried.
over the years. So there's no indication of where that really is. It's roughly 250 feet north and south. So we changed the ordinance, requesting that to be indicated it's just 250 feet north and south of the pier. The other was that the, I talked this over with Chief Kennedy and Ocean Rescue. They posted signs that there's no swimming near the pier. There's no ordinance prohibiting swimming near the pier. So we put one in. We put a modification in that allows for the lifeguards to adjust the distance depending on conditions. So nominally it's 100 feet now, north of the pier and south of the pier, but if conditions warrant it, the lifeguards have the ability to adjust where they put the flags, the no swimming flags. Again, this is for safety purposes. We don't want people getting tangled in fishing tackle, or if there's strong north or south side shore currents, we don't want people drifting into the pier and getting injured. So those are the changes that we've recommended. The amendments are
here. Well, thank you for reviewing those, and I guess we'll take them under consideration, review those, and probably deal with the input for the next meeting, unless you guys have any discussion here.
I mean, I'm supportive of approving it if we're allowed by the attorney.
I don't think
both of the changes just cover what we've been doing on the beach.
Okay.
So. This one doesn't require a public hearing, correct? For this change? I make a motion we approve as presented.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you to the committee for reviewing that. Planning and Zoning Commission. Chairman Galbraith.
Thank you. Craig Galbraith, the Chair of Planning and Zoning. What you have before you in this particular item is, again, came about obviously because the state had changed their statutes regarding planning and zoning, zoning requirements, and so we had to make sure that the town of Curie Beach ordinance was consistent with the state statutes. So you have one kind of cluster of recommended changes before you right now, again, with the public hearing, and then you have another cluster probably coming through your next meeting. And that hopefully will be the end of those clusters. We do have some more clusters that take place at the end of this year that we have to address. But these are ones that basically have changed as of December 31st of 2019. So, again, we recommend approval of this.
So these are the ones that are dealing with the legislative output of the state? Okay. And the training that everybody had?
Yes.
Okay. We did have a meeting on most of these today. I guess not all of them, though.
Yeah, so, Craig, how did that happen? Or is it because some don't require a public hearing? And some do, because we had a public hearing before this.
That might be it. That some of these do require a public hearing, and some do not require a public hearing.
Okay.
Yes. Depending on what chapter they're in. So,
okay. Yes. Yeah, Chapter 15 we went over today. We didn't talk about
chapter
11.
Chapter 15 requires a public hearing.
Yeah, we didn't talk about 11 or 14.
Number 14 do not require public hearing.
Okay, they do not require public hearings.
Well,
okay.
So this went through this past meeting, whereas Chapter 15 we went through the month prior.
Yes.
So, can we approve all the, which ones can we approve and not approve?
My understanding is you can approve them all because Chapter 50 requires a public hearing. That's what you just
approved. That's done today.
We again have some 11 and 14 that we just talked about and forwarded to the town council in our last meeting. So you have those in front of you too, but those don't require a public hearing.
Okay. Commissioner Whitley, any comments? You've been part of this.
Just to approve it.
Okay. So your recommendation is to approve?
Yeah, make a motion to approve. Do I need to list all these out, Mandy?
No, I just need two separate motions, the motion for the public hearing ones and then the motion for the ones that are.
Okay. So we need two. So we need Chapter 15 as a motion first.
Where is it?
If you give him his hard copy of the public hearing, there you go.
Where is it? Oh, okay. Proposed text amendment to Chapter 15, Article 02. There's five of these here.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Just list each one?
Yep.
Okay. Proposed text amendment to Chapter 15, Article 2, Chapter 15, Article 6, Chapter 15, Article 8, text adoption to Chapter 15 within Article 8, and a text amendment to Chapter 15. Another text amendment to Chapter 15, Article 8.
Okay.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. So these were the items that we read and were prepared to discuss today in the public meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. So 15 is in place. Now we have to deal with the 11 and 4, I guess.
I'll make another motion to for the proposed text amendment to Chapter 11, Article 2, Section 30, and then proposed text amendment to Chapter 11, Article 10, Section 40. Then Chapter 14, Article 6, Section 30.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
You will notice at the end of each one of those in Chapter 11 and 14, it has a place to record each individual person, each individual vote.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and it's a good start. I know we have a way to go, but it's a good start. Legislature is helping us. Okay. The next item is the Historical Preservation Commission. I guess you're still on deck.
Still on. Again, Craig Galbraith, now the chairperson of the Historical Preservation Commission. What you have before you is the effort now for about 6 months for the HPC that we've been working on. To just kind of go over the process, this came about as an interest to preserve some of the characteristics of the downtown community, basically the B1 district. When this originally was discussed with the town council, there was some debate as to exactly what area we should be looking at, and it was a recommendation of the town council that we focus on the B1 district. And so what you have before you is in fact a proposal to focus on the B1 district. The reason that we're interested in doing this is that according to North Carolina state law, communities cannot really regulate what buildings look like or anything like that unless really the only mechanism is through a historic district classification. Historic district classifications are normally, and this is what we're suggesting also, is what's called an overlay district, where you have an existing district, for example, the B1 district, which has a number of uses that are associated with it and so forth, and so the historic district is an overlay district upon that. We already do have an overlay district down K Avenue. This is one that I believe we talked about and was approved about 2 years ago. So, you know, there is a precedent for an overlay type of district. Mm-hmm. The procedure for doing this, just so again everybody's clear, is the document you have before you is a recommendation that it be considered as a historic district. If you approve this document tonight, this does not create a historic district. There's a number of other steps that has to go through. What needs to be done is you have to follow steps, and these steps are established by North Carolina state statute. This then is sent, if you do approve, to push it forward. It's sent to the state, the Department of Cultural Resources. They have 30 days in which to look at this and then send back comments on that. If in fact comments are positive, technically it needs to go back to planning and zoning, since this is a zoning requirement. And we would have to draft some language that would be appropriate to creating the overlay district. That would then come to the town council, would have to go to a public hearing because this would be a zoning change as an overlay district. And at that time, and going through that process, and after the public hearing, then in fact the town, if they desire to, could create an historic district. It doesn't stop there, because the historic district simply allows us then to create what's called design guidelines and what's called a certificate of appropriateness process. So the design guidelines basically, and again, they can either be strict. For example, there are historic districts in Wilmington that are very strict, downtown historic district, for example, in Wilmington. Wilmington has a number of other historic districts where the design guidelines are fairly loose and lax, trying to create or maintain a culture rather than very, very strict design things. But the process then is, if it's established as a historic district, in order to manage the design characteristics and the cultural characteristics, is you have a certificate of appropriateness, or a COA type process, where you basically have a matrix that if somebody wants to change or do something to the exterior of a building, if it's a minor change, it could just simply be approved as the COA. For example, John can simply provide the COA associated with that. If it's complex, like somebody wants to tear down a building and put up a new building or do something substantial, add a second floor or something like that, it would probably have to go to the Historic Preservation Commission. So the Historic Preservation Commission, if everything is established as designed by the state of North Carolina statute, the Historic Preservation Commission then would issue COAs for more complicated sort of things. A couple things to point out is this only addresses exterior. This does not in any way address any interior type of issues. Again, since this is kind of the early stages of the process, we don't have any design guidelines. The design guidelines, I think, would be relatively simple and very, I won't say lax, but relatively simple. We don't want to discourage anybody from development. We just want to make sure that we maintain kind of this cultural characteristic of what our B1 community looks like. That was certainly the charge from the town council to do that. And it doesn't and as I already mentioned, doesn't deal with anything with uses either. You have the underlying use requirements from the B1 district. So it doesn't deal with uses. It doesn't deal with the interior. Let me just give an example. Let's say McDonald's wanted to come into, let's say we do establish a historic district. Right now, McDonald's could basically come into the B1 district and build whatever they want to build, as long as they stuck within the requirements like the sign ordinances and these sort of things. But they can make their building look whatever they wanted it to look like, with clouds and so forth. With a historic district in place, McDonald's still could come in because you could certainly, that would fit within the use, so you have restaurants as appropriate uses in the B1 district. But what they would have to do then is they would have to get approval from the appropriate agency, whether it be John or whether it be the Historic Preservation Commission, as to what that exterior would look like. And the requirement of the interest is that exterior then would look and be consistent with what the overall feel for the community is. So again, what you have before you is the document that, if approved, would be presented. And again, you're the proper agency here in the town. We are not allowed to pass that on. That has to be passed on by the elected officials. But this is simply to push this forward to the state of Department of Cultural Resources for the 30-day look-see and comments.
Okay, so as I read through this, I did notice that it kind of does set the district boundary, and it did talk about this historical significance of the area,
yes,
principally, which is what we're trying to establish there. I did have a couple questions, but I think you actually hit them, because I wanted to say, well, I don't see what the process is. Well, we don't have the process yet.
Right. Exactly. And one thing, it's kind of an unfortunate name because they call it a historic district or historic preservation district. But when you actually look at what the state language is, historic is only one of about three or four characteristics. There's also cultural type of characteristics and ambiance type of thing. And so what we try to do on this is capture a number of different components, not only just the historic characteristics, but also the family feel, community, and that type of thing. The process is not described in this because this is a document that's actually sent up to, at least
right,
the Department
right
of Cultural Resources to respond as to whether they think that a historic district would be appropriate given the information that we're providing.
So you made a very important comment. We're not trying to stop development. We're
no,
trying to guide the type of the development.
Guide
actually
what the exterior looks like.
On the exterior. So if we had if we had K Avenue from Curry Beach Diner to Jack Max, and the owners wanted to rip that down, they would actually have to come and say, hey, look, this is what we want to do, and this is what we want to build in this place. We want to go 35 feet, we want to put a restaurant on the top, whatever. And as long as the outside of the building is characteristic of the area, that's not a problem.
That's absolutely correct. And that would be established. There would have to be a second process where the Historic Preservation Commission would have to look at what the design guidelines would look like to provide some, obviously, guidelines for folks to do that. Once they build something that would be within the design guidelines, and the design guidelines would be written in such a way that it is trying to preserve some consistency with what that community downtown area looks like, then yes, then they could build, once they get that certificate of approval or certificate of appropriateness, they could build that particular building as long as it looked nice, and they could still put whatever use they wanted to have inside, whatever business they wanted to have inside, as long as it was consistent with the uses in the B1 district. And again, this does not look at any interior feel or design or anything like that. This is simply looking at the exterior.
So if when I try to go simplistic, I'm sorry, while I have my frame of mind, and then Alan, you can jump in, please. While I'm thinking about this simplistically, I'm saying that we are not telling owners what they can do with their property beyond the ordinances we already have. What we're telling them is when they do build a new property, there's some characteristics that we want as design points.
That is correct.
Okay. I was worried we were trying to.
Yeah. But how does this differ from our current overlay that we have in place?
Well, the overlay that we have right now is K Avenue, and that's simply a what's called a mixed-use overlay.
Yeah.
And so the mixed-use overlay is the idea that originally it was simply a residential. You could have a residential property now, K Avenue.
Okay.
With the mixed-use, now you can have, let's say, a business on the bottom floor and a residential on, say, the second or third floor associated with that. There's actually no design guidelines.
There's no design guidelines. Okay, fine.
Well, there's some landscaping rules and things like that, but nothing that has any sort of design guidelines.
But that add, this is where we add that step.
Right, and the K Avenue Overlay District is not into the B1 area. So the overlay district for K1 actually starts here and kind of moves towards 44 Fisher.
John, you have any questions? Joe, any questions?
That B1, that K Avenue Overlay was 5 years ago, Greg, not two. Time is going by.
And no one's used it at all, right?
And nobody used it at all.
You're right, about five years ago. And by the way, that was within the land use plan, too, that would be. And again, as you can see, when we wrote this particular document, we referred extensively to the existing land use
plan. Yeah, I did see that as well. I don't know, Dave, do you have any thoughts or concerns?
There's a question up here.
Oh, please.
Now, are the tax credits still available, state and federal? So you get to have a tax credit for a certain percentage of your renovation costs?
For what?
I'm not sure about the tax credit. My understanding is that's more appropriate not to historic district, but for historically designated houses.
Right.
And those are two different things.
They are
historically designated houses or buildings,
designation.
Which would get tax credit for fixing up. But a historic district is for a whole district. And I'm not sure if there's any tax credits.
Yeah, well, you know, we came from a historic district and we renovated seven houses. Now, they are houses, but yeah, we did one and converted it to an office, a commercial, and got both federal and state tax credit. I haven't kept track of it a lot, and when you're just starting one, I don't know, but the one we were in is, you know, well established, but a huge benefit to you.
It's usually considered a very important benefit because you can preserve the characteristics under the pressure of development. I mean, that's really what we're looking at here. And in the state of North Carolina, again, I had a historic building in Indiana, for example, that was designated historic building. And I, just like you, I got, you know, credits. I got tax credits from the federal as well as the state as well as the local.
Right.
That covered probably about 60% of the renovation of that particular property. But that was in a historic district, but that was for a specifically designated historic building. State of North Carolina has made it very difficult to regulate exteriors under any conditions, with the exception, and the only exception that we know of, is through the designation of a historic district to be able to manage what the exteriors look like within a historic district. The only other way of doing it, which is a very messy way of doing it, is with special use permits.
So two questions if we do this. One, does any property owner have to change if they're not in compliance with your standards as you write them?
No.
Just when they renovate?
Yes.
And that would only be external renovation?
Only external renovations.
And then two, where in the process do the property owners get invited in to this? Have they already been part of this process and I'm just not aware of it?
We have had, every meeting has been publicly announced, been public meeting. At various times we've had people show up and talk about this, particularly at the beginning of the process. Sometimes we have nobody. I mean, this has been about a 6 or 7 month process right now. So some meetings we've had three or four people show up. Other meetings we've had nobody show up.
I'm talking about property owners in the B1 district. Okay.
Yes.
That's who you're talking about. Okay. I just want to make sure I understand.
Particularly at the front end when we started this, and asking exactly the same type of questions. Mm-hmm. This does have to go to a formal public hearing.
Yep.
If it is. Mm-hmm. Designated as a historic district, but what you have in front of you right now is not at that point.
Right.
Simply, you send it and get feedback from the Department of Cultural Resources.
I do have one other question then, Craig. Is if we get to a position where we've got the process, we've got the everything in place, and we are at odds with an owner over something, is this a jurisdiction? I mean, is this a a legal thing? It's a court,
Yes, it is. The HPC, under the certificate of appropriateness, under North Carolina state law, is what's called a quasi-judicial thing. So they do have, you know, the right to issue these things. I am not sure, and I apologize, I'm not sure if there's what the recourse is, if they would just, I assume there is a recourse to the city council. Mm-hmm. I would assume there is.
Okay.
But I can't put my finger on that right now.
Okay.
You could probably write that into the overlay issue, certainly, which I would recommend doing, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Always trying to make sure that we don't put ourselves in an area where we could have significant legal expenses,
right,
because of something that we've decided to do. So any other questions? I think Craig's hit every question we could come up with.
I have a comment.
Go ahead, John.
Personally, I'd like to commend the Craig and his commission. I think the document that's there, call draft number 2-2920 was well done, and I
thoroughly
enjoyed reading it, and I support going on
to
the next step.
Well, thank you. I should point out that I didn't realize we have so many historic buildings actually in that district either.
Right.
I mean, we actually tried to find the dates when all these buildings were built, and there's some, you know, I mean, there's some buildings that are 50, 60 years old. We have a lot of them here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. We need a motion for them to take it to the next step?
I believe we will need a motion to accept it. And I think your point is from 1954, many of them are Hazel. Because there wasn't much left after for Hazel.
The diner was before 1954.
We have some from the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 1954, excuse me. It was 1954. Okay. Do I have a motion to accept what's before us, which is nothing more than saying we have a unique area, we would like to go into study of this unique area and ask for the support and the backing of the state to allow us to do that, is that pretty accurate?
To transmit the document to the state for a 30-day period of feedback.
Okay.
And that's technically what's required in the state statute.
So we haven't put any
more. I'll make a motion that the council approve this draft as our historic district plan and forward it to the state agency as Chairman Galbraith recommends.
A second.
Okay. We have the motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you, Craig. Good work. Administration, department head business, excuse me, administration, Mandy?
I don't have anything other than to say, but one day presents.
Okay.
We skipped one thing here, the Historical Preservation Commission discussion of an alternate member. Real brief, we're not going to have an alternate member for the HPC.
Okay.
We'll wait to get the feedback from the state and see how we proceed forward. That may change down the road, but at this point, we're staying as we are.
So the point is that if somebody leaves, we'll just appoint a new one.
Correct.
Through the process. Okay. Building Inspection Department. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Craig.
We have one more item. We did have one more item that the commission asked.
Ken Richardson, Commissioner on the Planning Zoning Board. Part of our planning thing, we have wanted to bring this to the commission and the mayor. Tony Garibay and myself would like to see if there would be any objection to us start gathering data on grants and information concerning underground utilities. The planning board had talked about this and said that's something we think that the town ought to start looking at. It's in the 10-year plan, and it'll probably be in the next 10-year plan. Not committing the town to a thing, but just wanted the blessing of the commissioners and the mayor to go ahead and say, okay, we want to go out and see if there are grants available what the cost scheduling and working with Duke to see what this is. If it comes out there's no money available, we know we're not going to have the town put a dollar into this. But I think FEMA has given West Palm Beach, $8 million. There's, I can't think of the other town in Florida that has got $11 million from FEMA, and it's for utility reliability in coastal areas. So there is money out there. Can we get any of it? But we'd like to go see if we can. Craig has done a lot of work on grants. He said he would help us out in that. And the next thing is just be able to contact people all the way down from Department of Energy through the state and Duke, and the people that actually do the construction of these lines, to find out what the cost is. And then we would bring it to you all and say, this is what we got. We'll let you know. It's a no-go. It's just no thing there.
Okay, I would tell you that as a council and as staff, we aggressively pursue every grant that we can particularly, you know, qualify for. So if you want to look for, I mean, certainly, well, I'm going to open it up to discussion here, but my opinion is we certainly could do that. I mean, if you look at what the grants are, there's even a grant that will allow you to buy land at the oceanfront up to 85% value or $250,000. Now, if you're going to use that for parking or something like that, that was, I mean, you'd still have a problem with what do neighbors want in an area if you're going to do something like that. So, but if you have a grant for underground utilities or, I mean, I certainly would want to know what it is, and we could then act on it. I don't know any other opinions here.
Yeah, I support anyone that wants to go look at the cost of burying the front row public utilities.
Mm-hmm.
Just realize that the cost you get, we need to run through public works because
there are
sewer and water issues when you try to bury the public utilities that Duke will not count.
This is not a single topic issue. We realize that okay. It is.
But I'm supportive of them. If they can find a lot of money for that, I think it will make the town look a lot better.
We just didn't want to run off and start talking to people without letting the council know what we were doing.
Sure, no problem.
We talked to a company out of Michigan that actually does construction, and they've given us, and I told them I'm talking to other private citizens, and they said that the best thing to do is go to Duke first, because Duke will have all the details of the feet of wire, the poles, mm-hmm. where we can do it. Get that first, and then go for your grant, because then you've got the details, so you can go ahead and do that. That was their recommendation.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
On a side note, Carolina Beach had a committee studying this, and I think they got an estimate of $15 million, and committee just kind of faded away pretty rapidly after that. So.
The other thing, when you ride around, it's really amazing how much of our utilities are already underground. All the HOAs are there, mm-hmm. and even going down 421, Seawitch, a lot of theirs are already underground. So it's not cheap, and it's not, but we, as a planning portion of the board, we'd like to look into it and see what we could do.
You might get
support.
You have the consensus of the council to go root away.
You get the call from you, you know where they're at.
Oh, we have a question? Yes.
A quick suggestion. I think what you want to target and your buzzword that you want to search for is resiliency. So look at the FEMA resiliency grants.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
I also should say Tony is in the utility business. So he is going to be a big help in that.
Okay, right. Good. Building Inspections Department, John.
I have nothing today.
Nothing today? Finance Department, Arlen.
Nothing from Finance.
Okay. Are all the initial budget contributions in?
All submissions are in. We're kind of evaluating at this point.
Okay, so we don't have to jump on any department heads, so to speak. Okay, you got all you need. Not yet, not until we look at it, I guess. Fire department. I think it is out of town.
Yep.
Coming back. Coming more.
Police department. Joe.
The pedestrian signs have been put up in crosswalks on the north and south 421. No one's hit them yet. Thanks for Public Works for putting up so fast. The other thing is the town gas tank is on track to be installed and completed by mid-May, and then we'll just go on with that. One other item that came up was a discussion about prohibiting firearms on town property, and the police department supports that, town property being town buildings like town hall and whatnot, as long as the ordinance applies for all the state laws.
Okay. It would be great if by mid-May we still have these gas prices. It'd be a great time to fill it up. But okay, mid-May, that'll give us a season and whatever the season brings us. So, okay.
We're still working on the final cost of everything. We had a firm quote for the tank, but there were some additional costs.
The concrete added up to.
Yeah, the concrete was a little more expensive than we originally anticipated. So it's actually going to be a little bit more than what we originally budgeted, but it is going to be fully financed. So kind of the net effect is zero.
Okay. John, are you looking at what they're doing with the concrete and stuff like that?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. So if it looks out of standard, I'm sure you'll jump up and let them know.
Well, we had an engineer who always planned for us. So.
Okay. All right. Public Works. Jim.
I'm asking for council's guidance on this one tonight for the free pickup.
Well, I've communicated council. I'm totally against it, but you guys do whatever you need to do.
Well, let me remind
council. And I communicated. I'm totally for it.
I understand, and that's fine. I'm fine with that. I'm just letting council know.
Yeah, let me remind council that we do also do a Thursday pickup every Thursday for the residents, for a small fee.
So you're talking about the free pickup that we normally do. We used to do in the spring. We didn't do it last year.
Yes, sir. We didn't do it last year because of the hurricane from the previous
year. Right.
No, I see that as a benefit that our taxpayers get for what they pay in their tax dollar. And if we limit it to just yard debris, no, don't pick up mattresses or furniture or just
construction debris,
construction junk and everything, that's what I would recommend. So,
okay. Well,
I'll leave that out there for everybody else.
Let me also put in my two cents about that. I've seen many residents ask for something like that, and then return. They call a landscaper to come in and landscape their whole yard for them. My suggestion, the council would be have the residents call to do a one-time pickup. You know, as long as it's scheduled, we'll get up for them for free.
So you say schedule it.
Yeah, have them scheduled so we don't go back over the same streets over and over and over and over and over.
That's fair.
I could live with that. I think that's a better way of tracking it, Jimmy, be honest with you, how you're going
to
do it.
Personally, I would love to do away with it because we don't have the manpower or the time.
I think what I would like to see is what is the exact proposal for the free pickup.
Yeah, well,
so I think we can talk about it, I think, at next meeting if we come up with what are we going to pick up? Are we going to do it the way you just mentioned it? And if we do it that way, we're just going to do yard debris. And if you have a sofa and a grill and other things, you're going to have to go through the normal process on Thursday. But I think we're going to need to outline this pretty well, so if we come up with something we agree to, it is communicated effectively. I'm happy to send it out, but I'd like to know exactly what it is we're going to do.
Yeah, well, so
I vote on the side of Mr. Hagler. I'm against the free pickup.
So it's not free, right? So in America, we're using free for everything. Nothing's free to start with. So what we're doing is saying that all the citizens that don't dump stuff on the side of the road are paying for the people that do, because that's how it works, right? So the issue for me is the town has a process if you decide to clean your yard where you pay for your pickup every Thursday. Any Thursday, anyone in town can take stuff out to the street and Public Works drives around and looks for it and they pick it up and then they get charged for it. And the citizens that don't put anything out don't get charged for it. And that's the issue for me is, first off, it's not free, so let's not use that word because it's not free. What's happening is the people that aren't putting trash out are paying for the people that are through their tax dollars.
But we have people that are putting it in their regular garbage.
Some of them are. Yeah, okay.
A lot of them are.
None of our garbage trucks are getting sent back for that, as far as I know, right?
No. Well, they are starting to put brush and stuff in the garbage cans now.
Yeah.
So
that's a different issue. I mean, that's an ordinance
to look at too.
Yeah.
Whether I dump it or do I leave it? I mean, I think it's in the ordinance where you're not supposed to put.
Yeah, you're not, because the landfill could reject your whole truck for that.
Exactly.
I mean, I like Jimmy's proposal that we come up with something to where if you call in and we can track what property you
can
do it.
A one-time deal.
That way if people do a big yard cleanup, they don't put it in their trash can.
But how long are you going to do? Are you going to do that for a certain period of time, Jimmy, or all year?
Well,
you don't want to do that in July.
Exactly.
So it needs to be over a
And that's what
time
Greg's saying, come up with a set of parameters.
Yeah, I would like
but
to
even
see.
That would be pushing it into May.
So. Yeah, that's the issue. I think we want to come up with it tonight. So your proposal, Jimmy, is that we say for the month of April, right? So you have time to get ready. For the month of April, if you want to do a yard cleanup, call Public Works or email. I mean, you want Robin getting 200 calls? That's the issue.
Actually, she was the one that suggested this.
Okay, well, then she's signing up for it. That's fair.
So,
just do 2 weeks in April. Maybe the last two weeks of April.
I'd take it through Easter weekend so people are down here over the holidays and clean their yards up.
It was Easter.
I'm open to that if that's what Jimmy... If Jimmy recommends that, I'm open to that.
Hey, I'm willing to try
okay.
and see if it works. And if it doesn't, then we can always come back and change it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, anything, it's just gotten to the point where a lot of people take advantage of this.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's not free. It's taking up a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of gas, and a lot of landfill charges.
Right. So the proposal is a 2-week period where you can pick up yard debris, have it picked up free with a phone call, one time only.
One time only.
If you have other things that are not yard debris, you're going to go into the Thursday process.
Right.
And then we got to figure out how to communicate that. That's the separate issue. I mean, we can do it on our website. And
we're getting a lot of calls about it because residents are used to getting it in April.
Yeah.
They always call, when's the free pickup in April?
Yeah.
And they're not really looking for yard debris. They're looking for house debris.
Yeah, well,
we shouldn't pick that up.
No, we shouldn't.
The floor is too much.
And house debris, we have a process for that.
Any house debris left?
There shouldn't be any old mattresses anywhere.
I find some every spring.
Yeah,
but I do pay Jimmy to come and get it.
So I think to communicate it, we can put it out in town, use an email, maybe a letter from the mayor, just an update on the process. And then since we are changing things, I would recommend I can send out a text alert to all of our citizens just to kind of help get the word out.
Yeah. As long as we know how to communicate.
So, if we do April 1st through the 15th, would that be a Wednesday to a Wednesday? And that'd give them 2 weekends.
Is that all right, Jimmy? Well, does that work?
Jimmy, how many guys are in on the weekend? Do we normally pick it up on a weekend?
I'm not saying pick it up on the weekend.
We don't pick up on the weekend.
But I'm saying that would
be. It gives them time to come down.
Yeah, and
correct.
Cut it.
Over the weekend.
Right. That's
right.
Yeah.
April 1st through April 15th.
Yeah.
Okay. Make your motion in a second.
Okay.
Okay, Greg?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we do from April 1st to April 15th, yard waste only pickup for any citizen, and I didn't call it free, any citizen that comes in, that calls in to Public Works, will pick it up.
Second.
One time.
One time in a year.
One time in each address. Yeah. One time.
Okay. We have a motion and we have a second. All in favor of the pickup, no charge pickup or whatever it is.
Courtesy
pickup. Okay, courtesy pickup. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All in favor say all. If you oppose?
No.
Okay. John.
There you go. The ayes have it.
Okay, we got 3-2.
There you go. The ayes have it.
First split that we've had in a while.
Okay. Anything else, Jimmy?
No, sir, that's it.
Okay. Recreation Department. Nikki? No? Okay, yeah, I guess we're going to talk about other things during Corona.
And new business. Yeah. I get through old business.
Old business. Wastewater drainage audit response.
Okay, so Public Works is working through the audit process. At the April meeting, we'll be bringing information of that. Basically, there'll be three things that we are recommending or will be recommending at the April meeting, so just to update you. One is I'd like permission and guidance from the council on reforming our stormwater committee. I think it's critical that the permit owners in the town that have pond responsibilities be on that committee. So I'd like permission from the council to contact them to propose members. We have at least four permit owners that have ponds, and they should be on that committee. So that's why I'm looking for permission from council to reach out to them before the April meeting. And then at the April meeting, Jimmy and Robin will be presenting changes to our stormwater policy that we recommend for council's review and approval. The stormwater committee is, as I see it, reforming, has two responsibilities. One is communication. That's one of the areas we got dinged with in the audit that we need to work on. And I think the stormwater committee is the right people to do that. And the second one is permit compliance, because they're the owners of the permits. One of the things that the state is pushing now, after they get audited by the federal government, is that we should be auditing the permit owners within our boundaries, which that's a state function, but they're pushing it down to the municipalities, right? Because they get burned. I think that's my thoughts. Not anyone's told me that, right? Because we're now getting some permit compliance responsibility, I think it's pretty important for this stormwater committee to be made up of the people that have to do the compliance, right? So that they know what their compliance responsibilities are. If you remember, council, I informed you that we had one homeowner association whose permit had expired last June. They have put in for their permit approval, but the process is so slow that they're still in expiration as of a month ago. I couldn't check tonight. But anyway, what I'm looking for tonight is a permission from council to reach out to the permit owners and ask them to propose a member for the stormwater committee.
Comments?
I support that.
I think that's a great move.
Okay.
We don't know.
John, can you put us on mute again? Or are you on mute? Thanks, sir.
Let me make a comment.
Okay.
They're allowing me to go up and feed my dog, so I'm going to jump off.
Excellent.
Okay, John. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go.
Okay.
That's the only thing I have for the update.
You have consensus to begin that process.
Okay. And you said we need to.
Can we excuse John for the remainder of the meeting?
Make a motion. We excuse John Ellen.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Cool.
Okay. So back to your question. I believe you have consensus to pursue.
Okay. And I'll keep council informed. I'll copy you on the emails to the homeowners associations. My proposal will be, all of them are within homeowners associations, so my proposal will be to reach out to the president of the homeowners association via email and ask for a proposal. My only concern is they may not have homeowners meetings in the next month, so we might be gapped according to what their processes are. I'm not really sure.
Okay. Okay. All right. Anything else?
No, sir, not on wastewater.
Okay. So that's actually one of the actions that we're putting in our action plan.
Yes.
To exactly respond to the audit. Okay.
Yes, it is.
All right. Next is the parking RFP requirements. Can we put that up? Or am I looking at that? Okay. Council, the Committee on Parking has taken a look at, we've met on this for quite a while. We've had two public hearings about parking, and we have told the public, at least in the public hearings, that we would be pursuing an RFP. An RFP is not a specific intent to do anything. It's a matter of finding out what can be done. What I wanted to go to council and tell the other members of council, since Mr. Whitley's been on this with me, is what are some of the solutions that we are looking for relative to parking? Of course, the first item is it must be profitable, or we obviously we wouldn't do it. Second item is season duration would be from May 15th through September 30th. May 15th, it says May 1st, but it should say May 15th because that would allow us to extend the early fishing period and allow some of the blue-collar fishermen two more weeks before parking starts. At least that could change at some point in time, but that would be our thought process there. Charging hours, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Long-term parking allowed in beach access points and on Atlantic Avenue. Short-term parking, 3-hour parking allowed on all of K. The intent there is to make sure that we are getting some turnover for the restaurants and the businesses and eliminate the current practice of people pulling in at 5:30 in the morning, going to the beach and pulling out at 7 o'clock at night. So the intent there is to really make sure that we have some flow on K Avenue. Reduced parking cost of all day or hourly parking on 6th. We would look at a graduated process, meaning that if you park closer to the beach, you'll pay a little more. If you park further away from the beach, you would pay less. Don't know what those numbers would be. Clearly, I'm not a fan of some of the new numbers that are being floated. All 7th Street is free parking for town recreational facilities. So all of the recreational facility parking would be free. Up on 7th Street, which is by the ballpark, the tennis courts, and now the potential there is that everybody will park there to walk down to the beach and take up all that parking. But at least to begin with, I think that that parking should be free. Seeking the least equipment solution to keep maintenance low. What that means is an app solution requiring numbers for spaces but no posts. Some kiosks in special areas. That would be kind of like you're doing with an Uber. Instead of putting a post at every blasted parking spot, our request would be that the spot would be marked number 42. When you pull in the number 42, you would get your app on your smartphone. You would say, I am in space 42. I am going to take 2 hours. And it would happen with your credit card. Now, not everybody has smartphones, and some people get excited. But it works in Wilmington. It works at Carolina Beach. It worked in our test, where we allowed people on the beach to just go back in and extend their hours. So people generally know what they're doing, but we would have a few kiosks, as few as possible. That would eliminate the issue of either having the lease equipment or having to keep equipment maintenance up, and hopefully it would bring down the cost of the management process. The only thing that it does open the door to, and I think we all know, software generally is not cheap, and you usually have to pay for the software, and then you have to pay a licensing fee every year. So we're not sure where that is, but we do like the idea of eliminating a whole pile of mechanical equipment along our beach. Cost to locals. There was a discussion there, and a lot of the locals have said they would be willing to participate with a cost for free parking. A cost was recommended at approximately maybe $25 for a sticker. You could get two stickers if you like. One would be for your golf cart, if you so deem. But the intent there is, if the process were to be profitable and we did it, that could be changed over time. Could be reduced. No cost to park on Sunday morning from 8 to 1. We have a few church properties that have a relatively large following. Our intent is not to charge them to park. So Sunday mornings from 8 to 1, anywhere, you would be able to park free. local employee parking passes at reasonable cost to be determined. That is a conundrum that we're hoping that whoever comes up with information and an RFP response can help us with. We have approximately 70 people who work downtown at any given time. There's more in total, but at any given time, I think 70 is about the largest number. And we need a place for their parking. They can't pay $20 a day, every day, or whatever, 10 or 15, whatever the number's going to be, to park to work. So we need a solution there. One could be that the downtown private business owners use their lots for that, if they so deem. Or we have also talked to them about if they would like to, and it makes sense, they could participate. I'll give you an example. Like, we could have a 1T space called One Town, and we could have a 1R space or a 1S space, a 1 Robinson or a 1 Sam. When you park in those spaces, there would be a different process by which there would be some type of revenue sharing between the lot owner and the town, since you'd be paying for the software. So there's some things to be worked out there if that is the process. And we do not have all the business owners on board yet, just to be honest with you. Enforcement of parking by contract. So we are not going to use our 14 police officers to run around and make sure that people are paying for parking. That will be a function of the management company. Our police officers will continue to do the things they do best, which is to keep us safe and to intimidate the bad guys not to try anything. Right, Joe?
All right.
Additionally discussed, we would ask for, it's going to require signs, obviously. We would ask that the management company recommend signs. We don't want signs everywhere. I know you don't, I don't. So we would have to come up with something there. Estimate the hourly charges to be the same as Carolina Beach. Well, that was before the new numbers. I don't necessarily think that we want to. I would personally, and you guys, again, this is not set in stone, but I think if we did have a process, I would actually care to be less so that we can tell our downtown businessmen, we are the business value at the beaches. You can come here for less, but you will contribute. Whoever does come here will be contributing to town revenue. Fees to citizens will be minimized based on the expected returns, and program revenues will be used as directed by council for any needs. Could be for crosswalks, could be for burying utilities, could be for whatever it is. Now, just as a point in fact, when we did our 40-day, 100-space test, we brought in $18,000, but we did not pull in enough money to pay the cost of the program. Now, that was done because we had to put in cement and kiosks, and it was an expensive test. However, we did pull in $18,000, and there were 140 empty spaces right there in front of those spaces. So even with 140 empty spaces, those lots generated $18,000. I don't know what the answer to this is. I think it is something that we need to explore because our revenue capabilities are becoming more and more limited. We have no place to expand. And we will, if council approves with these particular recommendations, then we would start. I've started an RFP. It's a little more complex than I expected. I'm at about page 18 and I got a way to go. So in any case, so that's what we would like to put out as part of the RFP. And I think that's pretty consistent with what the parking committee heard from people in the town meetings. So comments, guys, is this what you want to see go out? They'll recommend others, I'm sure, but this would be a program that I think.
So this is like your assumptions in the RFP. So
yes, that's
the
what
people
we,
that the I guess, three parking companies now, right?
Right.
We'll use this as they build their, here's our recommendation, right?
Right.
Okay. I think they're good recommendations. I mean.
Yeah, I just, you know, they may want to tweak it to say you need to do this or that, but I think for the purpose of the RFP is perfect.
Well, they would all have to address each of these items, mm-hmm. and then they could offer, if they think
correct.
There's a better solution, they could offer that.
Yeah,
but they would all have to do this so we could get a sense for what type of management system costs would be engaged if we did it.
Okay.
Well, you're part of it, Joe, so I guess you're not going to, you're okay.
I'm good with everything. Just so the people know, the season duration, Carolina Beach is proposing March 1st through October 30th.
Next year.
April 1st.
April 1st this year.
Okay, April 1st.
April 1st.
And their hours are going to be 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. So we're trying to definitely be a little more.
Yeah. Like I said, we would want to be
agreeable.
The value. The intent, my personal intent, is not to make people go away from Kiri Beach. Because we need them, we need the ROT, we need that to, so we're not trying to make people not want to come here, we're trying to manage when they come here.
Right.
Right? And that's the difference.
I do, however, disagree. I think we should mirror what Carolina Beach charges.
Well, we'll see. They'll probably recommend something to us.
Well, and assumptions, I mean, the good thing about the RFPs is the amount charged is an easy, they can give us both and show what the impact
you can get
is, right?
Scenarios.
Because that's really easy once they do their model to change that one number.
Yeah.
It just changes the output. It doesn't change any of their cost. It just changes the revenue. So they can model that and then tell us what makes sense, right? I think we should get the information just like when we looked at it 4 years ago, and then council's got to decide what they think.
Yeah, last time we did
people
it, we
want
at it
and it's the right thing for the town.
Right.
I think it's always we should look at it.
So, okay. Then,
you
Dennis, you're on that committee. I miss anything?
No, I think you got it.
Okay.
Do you need a motion to move forward with that? Or
No, I just want to make sure that you are okay with what's going to go in the RFP. Any motions would come after we see what we're doing. So that's the basis. And then we'll look at what we get, and we'll look at what they recommend.
Are they going to be able to bring the RFP back to the April meeting, you think?
I assume
they can turn around pretty fast.
I think they could probably turn it around fast. We can request that they give, you know, that they look at it and give us a response in 2 weeks.
Because at least one or two of the companies did it 4 years ago.
Yes.
I can't remember the last time, but they, you know, so they have a lot of the information. Sixth Street's a change, and I guess you're going to do E Street, where we put bumpers,
right?
And I Street, or I Avenue, E Avenue.
So all 632 bumpers would be part of the process. There are no bumpers on 7th, I don't think. Just wood.
Just
wood framework.
Yeah, that's right.
So, okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We will proceed, and we'll see if we can have some information for the April meeting. One good thing about going with the software solution, if that is possible, is it's not intrusive and it could be relatively quick, I guess. But I want to make sure that we all realize the business community is an incredibly important part of this town, and we will work with them and the community, and everybody may not all get what they want, but we will try to find a solution if it makes sense to do it. Okay. All right, I'm done. What's next?
You may go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Alan. Go ahead. I'm out of my space here.
I apologize for not having the notes in your budget packet, but our meeting was yesterday. Our meeting was a little bit, our meeting was earlier than what the Ports and Waterways did meet yesterday, our monthly meeting. And a couple of things, Carolina Beach Inlet is one thing we talked about. And there are April and June, July events that are penciled in. And they're, you know, the Coast Guard has said they wanted to keep a, 150 feet by 8 foot wide channel open. Mm-hmm. And it's a struggle. It's going to take more, events per year to get that done. So, but that, those are scheduled for April and July, and they're continuing to work with them. Also, the next Coastal Storm Damage Reduction Project, or Beach Renourishment, as we like to call it, will come up in fiscal year 22. This will be the year that all three beach communities get their renourishment. So we're looking at a estimated cost of about $35 million to do all three, which is going to put the federal share at about $20 million. So we've got some work to do between now and then to get make sure that funding is there. And we could pay for it all if we had to. The money is there, but we don't want to deplete the ROT money from that. So that's a that we've got some work to do, and, you know, getting those plans in and everything. And that would put the federal part at 20. Our part of that, again, is about $15 million, and Carolina Beach would be 10, and Riceville would be 10, and that's all because we have to pump the sand so much forward. We all know that. And finally, the ports and waterways have not been necessarily involved in the channel widening project, but they have been attending the meetings, or Layton has, and some of the other members have, and of course the mayor and I have. They are in the process of doing the permitting now. We're continuing to emphasize the possibility of damaging groundwater drinking supplies, and also the aquifer if they somehow crack it and infiltrate it. And so we're working with that. I've made some contact with Division of Water Quality, but they've not called me back yet. So I'm trying to get their view on it. The local Division of Water Quality, Jimmy got me in touch with the lady up there. I guess she's in Wilmington. Very helpful, but the people from Raleigh that's attending these stakeholder meetings aren't responsive right now. So I'm still working on that. So, but that's all I have, Mayor.
Okay. North End and NADA ramp. Nancy, could you tell us where we are on that, please?
Well, I'm walking to the podium, coming down to
Council. You certainly may.
So another project that I'm on, while I have Jonathan here from LB and Sign. I sent information on the stormwater pipes and the fire lane from Matsu to Council. We started out with a survey with 1,115 linear feet from the ditch on K Avenue to 309, behind 309 Settlers Lane. And then we came back and extended that from K Avenue to the water tower, which is near the 600 block. Jonathan pointed out something in his quote that I also forwarded to you today. I had recommended that perhaps it would help with Matsu to have some sort of an engineering assessment of what this will do, since this is on their land. Once we got past Jonathan.
One acre of disturbance, so it's 1 acre, it's 0.99999 acres.
So the 1,115 linear feet is under that?
Theoretically should be under it.
But once we go over that, we'll be looking at permits, permitting fees that will be required, that would need to be taken into consideration with your budget when you decide.
We should stick to the 309.
What you want that request to Matsu to be. Does that make sense?
Yes, it did. It did say, we were trying to determine what that would basically cost, and LDSI has helped us with that. We're going to have to think about that, given that we have other areas of the town that we want to look at, and that's an important area as well. And but we're going to have to take a look at all the demand that we have for them and where we would like them to go next. And
So I think the issue is, if we do what we initially said, we can do it without permitting, right? And that may solve the initial problem. And then if after we do that, we come back and do the second part some other time, then we're still not permitting, right? So breaking, even though it's sort of sliding it in, but breaking projects in part is a reasonable strategy, and I think that's what we should do. The only issue is, the only issue is Mott's, there you go, you guys hold your hands. The only issue is the Mott's approval process is the concerning part of that.
And with Mott's, things are agreeable right now.
Right.
That could change.
I also think we got an issue of design that we got to make sure that we have the whole thing designed at one time. If we're going to phase it, we phase it. But you got to make sure that it's all going to work together.
And if we did 309, we had a storm similar to Florence, and it caused issues from 311 on down. The optics on that are not going to be very good.
Well, the issue is that, and maybe this is my grumpy side, but just like I did with my property, you could berm the backyards of all those properties, the property owner, because that's not town property that's fallen onto them. That's federal government property. Any of those homeowners that are really saying that I'm worried about my house, all I got to do is build a 6-inch berm on their back property line and it'll fix it. But they want the town and all their fellow citizens to pay for fixing their problem. And that's the issue I have, right? So I think it's exactly right. Moving some of that water, but if you fix part of the problem, the biggest ponds that you and I saw when we walked back there were on this end. You walked back and added all this other stuff, and now it's turning into, you know, $50,000, and then that's not including putting it in. That's just the permitting stuff that all the citizens are going to have to pay for a responsibility that I don't know that I would say is the town's responsibility. I'm not saying that we shouldn't help our citizens, that's our job, but I'm not saying that water coming from federal property onto personal property, not crossing public property, town-owned property, in a fire lane that the town did not build and does not maintain is not necessarily all the citizens' responsibility.
That's why we could get Matsu to weigh in on some...
Well, I mean, if Matsu's willing to pay for it, you know, we tried to get Matsu to build berms down to the south end for this very same issue, and they won't do it. I mean, their fire line, and we can't get in a fight with them because all of us recognize that they have the biggest cost driver that they could do to the town is close our lagoon. So we can't be mean to them. We have to be good players. But honestly, they should let us build just a berm line all the way down the Curie Beach fire line and fix all. Then if there's water over there, okay, there's water over there until it absorbs after the, you know, it gets absorbed back into the nice sand, and we're not trying to move water, right? But, you know, I don't know if the right answer is not to just ask them, look, can we just build a berm right there on the property lines and let Jimmy get back there with a bulldozer and build the berm? But I know those people won't like that because half of them are sleazing on into that property to do gardens and all kinds of other stuff. So they won't like that either. But a lot of them are using that property.
I've got some concerns that, and I think it's addressed in the second paragraph where they said additional shallow pools and mud puddles may form because where we put the pipe or where we put our stormwater line on that property, it may not flow to it. It may cause pools back there. Am I saying that correctly?
I'll clarify that just a little bit. Is based on the survey that we were provided and just the level of survey that you can feasibly do, there is what we call in the construction industry just landscape grading. We're moving, Mr. Jimmy's moving dirt with a bulldozer and an excavator. There's occasion that the backhoe of a shovel needs to be your excavation tool in order to promote some shallow pool grading towards that inlet.
Correct.
So you're correct, but it's more of a shovel spoonful instead of an excavator bucket spoonful.
Yeah, and I had some concerns that depending on what the survey looked like, we may not be solving our problem totally, but because we put a pipe in the ground.
Right. Yeah, you got to do some grading afterwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, yeah. You got to make it the low spot. And I mean, I think you can do that. But I think my concern is that we're, and we do this in a lot of places, right? So I'm not totally against it. We try to help homeowners with stormwater. But now, most of it's been at least our streets, right? So at least there was public property somewhere adjacent. This particular area, there is no public property. There's no public property that we're talking about doing this. And it, we're, when it was just a pipe to get stuff back there because we are worried about sheet flow in their fire lane, that if they wouldn't have built a fire lane, we'd be mad, but they built one and now it's having water problems. I'm just concerned this project can't keep blowing up.
Well, Jimmy, don't we have a pipe back there now? I know we have grates back there because there was some people accusing some people of putting rugs over them.
That was north of three.
Yeah, that's on.
That's on easements on property.
Yeah, that's our easement. That's our lot.
Okay.
Once you cross that fence line, it's Mopson property.
Okay. Yeah, those are in people's
lots.
Those are in our easement. But,
yeah, so, I mean, they're in our easement. Their property. Yeah, they're taking right. water and it's putting it somewhere. Where's it putting it?
One of the ditches.
Is it running it to the ditch?
It runs all the way to the north ditch.
To the north ditch. Yeah.
Runs all the way behind there to the ditch.
Okay.
And goes back to the river. I mean, that's my concern with this. From my standpoint, I'm in favor of our initial smaller proposal, which doesn't get us in all these costs of permitting or not doing anything. But I don't know, biting more onto this in stormwater. We already have some stuff from what Jonathan showed us to the Public Works is going to come with stormwater requests to fix pinch points.
I mean, I think this is all in the grand scheme of what we got to consider for stormwater.
Right. So I'm fine with mixing it in with everything else, and then we'll give you what we think is a priority, and council can decide what to do. But I don't think we approve this right now. The concern Joe would say, which he's right with, is this one's got more time criticality because of the Matsu issues,
mm-hmm.
we think. We're not sure, but that's what we think. Do you agree, Joe? Is that fair capture?
Yeah.
Can it be part of the budget process, though, or is it? Because when's that turnover? When's the?
August.
August. Yeah, but they're not going to do anything in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my thought was is that since we have now an estimate and we know what we want to do and we have it surveyed as to what we want to do, I think we could ask Matsu to say, look, we're not at a position where we're going to do this, but if we deem that it is necessary, we'd like your approval.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, we've done the work to get their approval. We don't have to
put a shovel in
do the work.
We don't have to do the work yet, but we to get their sign off on
it. I don't know if Nancy would agree with that 100%. Is there enough information that you could, but we don't have the engineering drawings that would attach to it, right?
I have the engineering drawings, yes.
Yeah.
No, I have the survey.
Yeah,
I don't have
it. That's what I'm saying. We have a survey. We don't have it. Which I think the survey, I don't know how much they really need. That's what I'm uncomfortable with. How detailed a plan.
I sent what we have to Malcolm Charles. I sent the other two drafts for the clearing the ditch mm-hmm. and the lease of a lot to him as just a request for him to courtesy to tell me if there's something else that we need before
okay.
we leave. So I can send him that.
Right.
What we have so far, either with the 1,115 or the.
I mean, I think Jimmy's already specified the size of the pipe that we believe. So you can tell him the size of the pipe and here's the generally where it goes. I mean, it's running north-south back there. If that at least tells, that tells them a lot. I think I don't know mm-hmm. if they want we wanted the pipe size and brand and all that other stuff or what.
Well, I guess
the pipe size and the number of breaks and
yeah,
all that mm-hmm. in general area within the survey. So I can certainly send that to Mr. Charles and see his opinion. Because I understand now this goes all the way up the chain.
Right.
It goes above the curls.
Well, you can at least tell us if that's sufficient or not. That would be
right,
good.
Or if they think we need something else.
I have asked Mr. Charles to come over here to see the ditch work that we did.
Right.
And those beautiful access roads that they have mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
Right. So we can try to leverage that a little bit.
Also. Good.
And he said he would try to come over some point in the next few weeks.
But I would tell you, David, that you've twisted me a little bit here because I do not, I don't know, if you do something there that is not necessarily public oriented and you do it with public funds, how do you deny the next person who has the same problem?
Yeah, that's sort of.
We need to be careful with your money.
Right.
Right. That we're not using it in an inappropriate way.
Well, I'm like Joe. If we could get them to pay for it, it'd be awesome. Yeah. But I don't know that we can. We've been trying to get it fixed up before.
So Nancy, we're going to try to give them what we have and ask their permission to do it at some point in time if we think it's necessary.
The 1,115 linear feet, or do you want me to do the full 2,600?
I think you would say we want to do that portion that I think we've all agreed to. We want approval to do that, and then for the remainder, it's an area under study depending on how the area develops, and we would like authority to do that if we deem it's necessary.
Okay.
Is that okay, or we can spend more time on it? You can correct me. Because I know you got this down in your head a lot better than I do right now.
We'll do a two-part.
Exactly right.
Council. Yep.
This is what we like approval for, and we like future approval for this.
Right.
Would that be acceptable or not?
Yeah,
I think that's perfect.
Okay.
All right. And for the replacement of the beach access at 1004.5 with an ADA, Public Works has removed all of our town equipment, and our building inspector with the vendor today, so he might give you more update. Everything's in play, so John, do you want?
So, as of today, the contractor's going to bring, he at the on site, we had a small pre-construction meeting. He went ahead and broke off or fenced off the area with safety fence. He asked me if I wanted silt fence. I told him that I was more concerned about safety than the silt. Not too worried about sand migrating around there.
He's going to
start demolition over the next couple of days, and then you should see some action going on there. But there will be lumber parked in the right of way in that area. There's going to be extra parking going on there because it's only a 15-foot easement, so there's not much room or space for them to do what they need to do. So I'll try to handle complaints as best I can, but I'm sure you guys will hear it coming.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you. Anything else to worry about on this?
I believe you appointed me as head of the operation.
Yes, we did.
I appreciate it if the council would make that determination together. Or did have you already? I don't know.
Make a motion. John's the head of the operation.
Sir.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The lady also said Jimmy's going
to. If you need Jimmy's
going to what?
You need Jimmy's help to bring him along with you.
Yeah.
Nice. Jimmy, did I mess up on that one? You have to talk to me afterwards.
No. Actually, I think with all the stuff that's going on, we need John to watch that. Yep. He's got the CAMA contacts and all the other stuff. Yeah. So. Okay.
Nancy, the solar lights will just be foot lights. They won't. I've had a phone call already about what the solar lights. They're just going to be like down lights on the.
At the entrance and across, very similar to H Avenue.
They go at the rails.
Don't go down H Avenue.
Yeah, or okay. E Avenue.
Okay.
Yeah, or E.
They just go down the rails. But tell them I'll look at them.
They're fine. They're
Before real. I responded back, I just wanted to make sure I had the right number.
Okay.
There will be a solar panel.
Yep.
On
home. Yeah. Well, they don't live adjacent to it. They just live in the area. So.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy. Update on coronavirus.
Yep. Mandy, can you bring that up, please? He's going to PowerPoint.
Thank you, guys. See you.
And this will be on the website afterwards, when everything else, so if you don't catch anything. Next slide, please. So really, I want to talk about three things with council. New Hanover County Emergency Management had a meeting on Monday, March 9th, which I and Paul from the fire department attended, and I just want to cover that and cover the concerns. Oh, thank you. Cover the concerns and then what Cary Beach, what the town's doing. We also had a meeting with the department heads, the mayor and I, yesterday to discuss our response. Here's the agenda from the New Hanover County meeting. So they introduced their core team. They talked about the highlights of that time, key information, state of the nation and state. Then they talked about their objectives and a brief review of their framework document, which is still in draft form, but it's what we're operating off of. They stressed the fact that we need consistent community messaging, and we'll talk about how we're going to be doing that. And then we had a group discussion and really a work session on response and further messages, measures of social distancing and community mitigation measures. So these are the priorities. Just for everyone's knowledge, the lead agency in this event is Newnham County Health Department. And so the priorities, number one, as always, is personal safety. So it's minimizing illness, suffering, and loss of life. The second priority would be early detection of COVID-19. That's been challenging with the test kit issues and directions from above, but they're working on that issue. Third is to facilitate an organized and coordinated response led by New Hanover County Public Health and then our other community partners to include Curie Beach. Fourth, minimize economic loss, psychological toll, and social disruption of a pandemic. And then fifth, promote preservation and continuity of essential government operations. This is the one the department heads and the mayor and I focused on yesterday in our planning processes. Kind of just to remind everyone, there have been health or, you know, flu outbreaks, pandemic level outbreaks, at least three times in the previous century, 1918, 1957, 1968, where approximately 30% of the U.S. population was impacted with symptoms, and 50% of those who got sick sought out medical care. In 1918, the Spanish flu, it resulted in between 500,000 and 675,000 deaths in the U.S. In 1957, the Asian flu, some of us might remember 1957, we're old enough to, 70,000 deaths in the U.S. And then 1968, the Hong Kong flu, 34,000 deaths in the U.S. So these are just the big ones. Then we talk about other viruses. Ebola and SARS, it was identified in 1976. Worldwide, as of, you know, March of this year, there were 33,000 cases. 13,000 of those died, so it had a 40% mortality rate. It was limited to 9 countries. NEPHA, which you don't really hear about that much in 1998 because it wasn't that many people, but the fatality rate was 77%. SARS in 2002, MERS, and now here we are in 2020 with COVID-19. So the first thing that New Hanover County Public Health would stress is that the health system has actually dealt with this multiple times in our history. And we continue to get a little better, even though if you watch the news, you wouldn't think that at all. This is why this is a big issue. So this is a eye chart for those of you that aren't close, but on the left is flu mortality rate by age group. So that's starting with young people to the left and moving to the right. You can see the flu can be fairly deadly to people in their upper age groups. But COVID-19 is way worse, right? And that's the concern, right? So the issue for us as Curie Beach is we have 30% of our population and there's two bars to the right, right? So that's the 70 and 80 plus group. Let's add the three bars to make it 30% of our population, right? So 30% of Curie Beach is 60 and above, if you think about it. We have a lot of retirees. We cannot let it get to them. If we do, this is the issue, right? If you look in New Hanover County, Curie Beach has the biggest retirement population by percent of the population of any of the municipalities or the county. That's just the fact, right? So this could be a big issue for Curie Beach, and this is why I stress the stuff we're going forward about. We got to start changing what we're doing and make sure it doesn't reach our population, if at all possible. This was as of yesterday, so there's now 1,300 cases. I didn't update the graphic, but this was yesterday's graphic. There was 1,039 cases. Now there's 1,300 in the U.S. It's going to keep going up, and these are where they are. Today shows every other state but Idaho and Maine, and for some reason, either Mississippi or Louisiana, one of those two down there, are not impacted, but all the rest of them are.
Yeah, Mississippi,
yeah, interesting. This is just showing, as of the 8th of March, the people sick, so the reported cases, so this is a little dated, But then at the bottom is the number of deaths. Sorry, I'm going to get some water. And then this is just reported cases by day, new cases by day, right? As of the 8th, it's shot back up yesterday and today. Okay, so the key points from New Hanover County for everyone. The lead agency is New Hanover County Health Department. Official communication and guidance is from two sources. So Curie Beach is going to link, and we already do on our website, to one of these two sources. We're not going to have our own messaging. We're going to let the health department for New Hanover County do its job. And so all of our stuff, when the mayor sends out stuff tomorrow and when you go to our website, it guides you to these two places, either the New Hanover County Health Department for their coronavirus page or the CDC coronavirus website. And that's how we're going to go. So when I talk to our employees, and we've talked to, you know, the department heads have talked to their employees, their guidance is you should go out to the Curie Beach website, and it'll take you to the place where you should be getting your information. There have already been phishing attempts where people will send emails to someone saying this is a coronavirus update, trying to get their information on Facebook and out in email space. So really, if you're thinking about where you want to go get your space, you should go to the right places. You shouldn't let Facebook be your source of information for the coronavirus update. If you go to the New Hanover County website, to their coronavirus page, you can sign up and get an update, and we just got one during our meeting. So I got a text message during our meeting from this. It says, New Hanover County encourages residents to follow the state's mitigation recommendations because the governor just changed them today. So that was my update at 5:39. So if you go here and enter your text message, you'll get pinged every time the new update comes out. So you can stay aware of what's happening. Or you can just watch Fox News or MSNBC or whichever is your favorite all day long if you want to drive yourself crazy. Then separately, New Hanover County recognizes that there are rumor issues, and this is a problem with stuff like this. On their website, they have a rumor control tab, and if you'll feed them, if you hear some crazy thing and send it to New Hanover County, they'll like respond to it and put it on here so we can try to knock that down. So I think this is pretty smart of them. I actually commend them for doing it. I'm interested to see when people start going crazy, how well they can keep up, but at least they're trying. So this is a good place you can go. The rumor control will not be automatically texted to you. You have to actually do some work to go look at what they've answered about rumors. The only one on there right now is about over the weekend, someone was spreading the rumor that it was in the New Hanover County schools already, which they say it wasn't. So, any questions on New Hanover County or the concern? Everybody, you guys are already ahead of me, right? Okay, so Curie Beach response. The first thing, Craig and I were talking before the meeting, not Craig the mayor, but Craig Gilbert, about the fact that in emergencies, communication is the first responsibility of emergency management, right? Making sure people have accurate, timely information. To do this, the town's plan is we're going to send you to the New Hanover County Health Department. Once a case is in New Hanover County, they are going to stand up 24-hour EOC, right? So we don't have that right now, but when it gets here, if it gets here, then the EOC will be manned, and they'll have someone updating this in real time. Right now, they're updating it when there's changes, so just like the governor's change. CDC's already got their Emergency Operations Center standing by 24/7, and they're updating their website whenever they feel it's appropriate. So they're already doing 24-hour around-the-clock staffing that they can update their website. So that's why these are the right places for that. Any questions on communication? So all of this will be put out after our meeting by Mandy, and then the mayor will probably put out another letter to all the people that didn't come to our meeting tonight saying, here's where you should go for information, and here's how you can sign up. Look at this PowerPoint. The next thing is we should make sure that we can support the citizens, and that's really making sure that all employees understand guidance for their job. So the department has and I covered all of the CDC recommendations to first responders, to businesses and then for public works providers, and those were given to the department heads to pass out with their employees. So they've been talking with them, or will be talking with them over the next few shifts to talk about what's going on. And then lastly, make sure citizens are aware of the risk and taking appropriate action. So that's why we're talking about this. Departments are to train all employees on CDC interim guidance. And basically, I gave links to all the department heads, and they're working through that now. Departments to monitor CDC guidance for changes and update employees as changes occur. So both fire and police, the recommendation to the department heads, which they're working on interacting, is daily they will check the CDC website to see if there's changes to the guidance, and if there is, communicate that to their responders. Because what we don't want is our firemen or police officers to respond to a house that may have it and then pass it on to the citizens as they go through serving the rest of the town. So they need to be aware of protecting themselves. The 911 center has already changed their the questions they ask when you call now to ask if there's someone sick or with a fever, so they can let the fire or police department know when they dispatch them about issues. So we're already working on protecting our first responders. And then we will be following the guidance from the CDC for businesses, actively encouraging sick employees to stay home. So we talked through that process. So our employees will be told, if you're sick, don't come, give it to everyone else. If an employee shows up sick, separating that employee and then sending them home. Emphasize staying home when sick, what you should do at home, right? So on the CDC, they tell you, if you are sick, if you have flu-like symptoms and you're staying at home, these are some of the things you should do so you don't pass it on, right? Perform routine environmental cleaning. So we will be doing that in all town spaces. And then there are advice for employees if they're traveling. We don't have any employees traveling in the short term, but if you're traveling, things you should do. So our commissioners should do that, right? Our citizen guidance comes straight from the public health guidance from New Hanover County, which took this from CDC. It spreads very similar to how the flu is. You've all heard it, and hopefully you're doing this. Wash your hands for 20 seconds. Avoid touching your face, eyes, nose, your mouth with unwashed hands, because that's how you give it to yourself. Getting on your hands doesn't give it to you. It's then getting it to an internal taking. Don't get in close contact with people that are ill or exhibiting symptoms. Right, cover your mouth and nose with tissues. Don't reuse a tissue. I thought this one was gross. I don't know that we do that, but I was grossed out of that one. But don't reuse tissues, right? Clean and disinfect surfaces frequently. If you're sick, don't go give it to other people. And then there's guidance from the CDC for home, schools, college, businesses, faith communities. So if you go to these sites and you're something else, you're holding your community stuff, you can go and they'll tell you what to do there. There's a lot of information out there that I encourage you to go as a citizen. Any questions on that? Okay, so any questions in general? The town has already informed our employees what they should do, and we're working to make sure they have the right stuff to do that. We've asked them to look through the CDC guidance and let us know if there's any issues they can't comply with so we can help them. Like, if we can't get enough masks, what do? We're going to pass those up to through the emergency services to request for resources if we need them, if we can't find them. As we move forward, if conditions warrant, I will talk to council about other recommendations, possibly closing town hall if that becomes appropriate in the future, or any other issues like that. Sorry, I've been talking too much. So then finally, for the citizens, all the staff is making plans if we had to isolate or quarantine people if we went down on staff. So each of the department heads are prioritizing the work they would do. As an example, public works, if 30 or 40% of our staff calls off because either they're sick or someone in their household is sick and they get advised by public health to quarantine themselves, what would you do, Jimmy? Right? What would we do? What are our priorities? our first priorities would be water and sewer.
Right.
And then trash pickup. So we would communicate that, okay, instead of picking up trash weekly, it may be 2 weeks based on the staffing we have. And those are the issues that every department head is dealing with right now for planning purposes. Any questions? Are we doing the right thing as far as you can tell? Are we doing your work? Yes, sir.
Are they providing what cleansing method, like Clorox, or do they say what you're supposed to use?
It does. The CDC says that.
Does that? Okay.
Mm-hmm. So for hand washing, it's either soap and water or more than, if you're going to get right. hand sanitizers, you need more than 60%. Clorox, if you look on Clorox, and this is kind of cool, if you look on the Clorox wipes, if you have Clorox wipes, the very first thing it says on there for coronavirus, not for this specific one, but for coronavirus, for human coronavirus, that's the first thing it says, the first line on Clorox wipes. It said that for 10 years, by the way, but no one really realized that. So it's kind of interesting to see. So Clorox works for everything, right? It's a miracle thing.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you get under clothes. Any questions on that?
Just a real quick comment. I've been working with a very large institution in Wilmington that has put out nothing but confusing information over the last couple days. I'd like to really compliment, I think, County Council and the city here for having done an excellent job in terms of communicating with the residents as well as identifying the issues. I mean, I thought that was a very important graph about mortality rate by age.
Yeah.
And what that means.
Yeah, I mean, that's my biggest concern. I think that's the emergency management biggest concern for Curry Beach. We don't want to give it to our senior citizens because it could be deadly to them. And if we don't do the right things now, we won't be able to stop that. Okay, so that leads us to the next one, 9.2, yep. The street festival.
This was added before.
No, that's fine.
This was escalated.
Right.
Gatherings of 100 or more being postponed or canceled by city just to cancel the show's event.
That's what I think too. I just wanted to.
Yeah.
What was the date for you?
April 25th. So it's 6 weeks out, but you could still be. In,
no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think cancel. I mean, we could postpone it, and then she could call us, and she could pull the council to close it. But I think for planning purposes, with what the governor did, I mean, they canceled the ACC tournament, so I'm thinking our street festival.
Yeah,
and the NCAA.
But not the Azalea Festival.
Yeah. When's the Azalea Festival? March what? Like
first
two
weekend
or
in April.
It's like April 5th and 6th or something like that. Yeah, something like that.
I think the governor's announcement today made the Azalea Festival get canceled.
They're going to cancel Merle Fest.
Yeah. So anyway, my recommendation to council is we not close the road because we're not having the street festival.
I mean, it's a budgeted item, so yeah. council
will
say just cancel it.
So,
I mean, Nick, you okay to cancel?
I know some vendors that will be upset.
Yeah.
Well, I think no one would go.
So, they'll be upset.
They're going to get their money back.
We can encourage people to come to town. No. Know that they could possibly be.
Not on what the governor did today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so I make a motion we cancel the street festival and refund the vendors that have paid money.
Tomorrow's the deadline to notify them, and I've been holding off.
Right.
Okay. So we have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Cancel it, please.
And then if anything escalates, I'll poll council for any requirements. One last thing for interest for the citizens. Because quarantines come from common law, the authorities that are given to the government are pretty amazing, actually. I didn't know this, but I just learned this. So the governor, the county commissioners, or the mayor, if you can institute a quarantine, which is enforceable by law enforcement, and if you don't comply, public health can direct law enforcement to take you to wherever they say to take you with no recourse. So that's pretty interesting, right? So just if please don't put our police in the situation if public health tells you to do something of doing that. Because the authorities I was actually a little surprised by them.
So David, if the governor declared a state of emergency. That doesn't trickle down like it does during a storm situation where every community has every...
So we've already directed the department heads to track any spending to Arlen. We're under a state of emergency. So there's, you know, if we spend a lot on gowns or whatever, you know, chem wipes or whatever, we may be reimbursable. Just because we're under a North Carolina state of emergency, if we needed to do something with a quarantine, we would poll council and declare a state of emergency. We would probably never get involved because New Hanover County would go to the county commissioners, and that's how it would probably happen. But if New Hanover County helped ask us to do a quarantine, let's say like what happened in New York with the Jewish synagogue, our Lutheran church for some reason became the hotbed and they wanted to do something. If they ask us, they'd probably just do it under the governor's authority, yeah. But we would poll council.
Yeah.
If
I'm just curious.
If we wanted to do anything like Mandy has a telecommunicating policy, that's the next thing to talk about. If she wanted to implement that, she's still looking. We have time, but I asked her to give you guys something so you can start referencing it. Mandy requested to do that because it was the right thing for our employees to implement a telecommunicating policy for which the governor's already pushed people to do, we would then poll the council and then at the next meeting formally pass it. So right now, this is just a one for familiarity as Mandy gets some time to look at some other policies. But I think we will end up having a telecommunicating policy for COVID-19 so that if Mandy has to execute that, we already have a policy in place. This is not the one for we're asking you to vote on. This is one for reference. Did I capture that properly,
no.
Mandy? Oh, I'm sorry.
This is what I put together for you to have in case we need to put it in place.
Right.
So, I mean, you can review it and see if there's any changes you want to make to it. I added an agreement to it to cover us for liability and expenses for town property and things like that. But, I mean, in the event we needed to put it into place tomorrow, we could. Unless you guys have changes to it.
So if people could look at that and spend some time on it and give feedback to Mandy, and then we can poll the council for it so we have one.
We can poll the council.
Yep.
Okay.
One more thing is that on the conference call this afternoon, and there's an email out about it on the clerk's listserv now about, that it would be helpful, Governor Cooper said that it would be helpful for the governments and municipalities to go ahead or to declare a state of emergency. Have you gotten anything about that?
No, New Hanover County didn't talk about it.
Okay. Well, this is just floating around on the listserv now, and it came out, and that was from Topsail. And it was just on the conference call.
Yeah.
So they just mentioned that it would be helpful for municipalities to declare a state of emergency due to the impacts of COVID-19. This would help in securing supplies and resources, as well as being in a position if funding mechanisms become available for reimbursements and such. So... there's no response out yet as to who has or hasn't done it, but
can you forward that to me and I'll forward it to Stephen Seals and see what New Hanover County's doing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want us to be the lead guy off the list or declaring a state of emergency.
No.
When there's 15 cases and they're all in Wayne County.
We could always meet if
that's
we had to declare.
We can,
like we normally do.
Yeah.
Except while I'm in New York. So.
Yeah. We do have one other. I got a call from Tim Buckland, and Tim wanted to know if we wanted to cancel tomorrow or if we would actually hold tomorrow. He said if it's canceled, he will push it out to all of the necessary government.
We've already been calling people. I don't think we need to cancel it tomorrow.
We have. I mean, everyone's been calling us.
Yeah, and you said no, right?
The event is still on.
Steve did ask if we would have hand sanitizer.
Yes,
we will.
But I told him no toilet paper.
Yes,
no,
yeah.
Bring his own, so.
Fair enough. Okay.
So
he's got to bring his own.
So we'll just. I'm going to tell Tim it's 50 folks. It's not the 100.
That's
we're
going
to do it because it is informative along the lines of this activity. So
yeah, I mean, you asked for an update,
yeah.
And I think these people could be updated. No, I think it's the right thing.
Nothing.
Okay. All right. So.
One other thing that I have in front of you is a memo to council asking you to approve department heads to advance sick time if needed. We talked about it at our department head yesterday of advancing up to 12 days to employees that need it. So I'm asking approval from council.
Yeah, and we did talk
just
about that.
Just in this circumstance related to this incident.
That helps encourage our employees to stay home sick.
The CDC is recommending if they show up coughing or sneezing, I mean, fever or not.
That's right.
We're being requested to send them home.
Those are advanced days that they were reimbursing for.
Right, they would get them back.
Well, yes. We may, it depends. If we're under a state of emergency and what funding they're going to give us, we may be covered for those. If not, then we're advancing them to the employee, and we're just, as they approve them and earn them, they just don't have them.
They don't have them. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I make a motion we approve the advancement at department head authority up to 12-6 days.
Second.
Good. It is something the department heads thought would be incredibly useful in this process. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you,
Mandy. Okay, gentlemen, I think we have come to the, mayor updates, I don't have any. Commissioner updates.
Pedestrian committee will meet Monday, May 6th at 3:30 here. We didn't say that a while ago, but I thought it was there.
All right.
If anybody has any questions, what's going on?
I mean, not May 6th, excuse me. April 6th. I'm sorry, but April 6th.
If anybody has any questions, what's going on behind Town Hall? That's Matsu's going to be clearing out between Dow Road and the fire lane over the course of the next several, they said weeks, but I think it'll take longer than that in anticipation of controlled burns next year.
Anything there, no, sir?
Okay. All right, we have no requirement for a closed session this evening. Therefore, I would like a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.